Hello, folks. Welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. I am your host, Ken Molman, and Blog Talk seems to have recovered from its issues. And so we've got a lot to cover tonight, but for those that don't know, apparently Blog Talk Radio was hacked about a week and a half ago, which is why last week's show, the music was acting all funky and there was the delay. And I apologize for the technical issues, but last week's show was really good. So if you missed it, please go back, listen to it. I know people couldn't get into the chat room. I know people were having trouble getting the stream to work, but it is archived out there for podcast. I downloaded it myself and listened to it just to make sure it came out okay, and it did. So, you know, all of our shows are available by podcast if you missed the original show. And, you know, I think last week's show was a really good show. So if you missed it due to the technical difficulties of Blog Talk Radio, please take time to go back and listen to that show. Well, as mentioned, we have a lot to go over tonight, and we start out with some good news. There was a survey done by Business Insider, and they did a top 10 cities to live in America. And Kentucky kicked some butt. We got three of the 10 slots, which was quite good. I mean, that's not a bad thing for the state. Coming in fourth, Murray came in fourth place. They talk about it having, obviously, Murray State, and it's a college town, and there's a big festival, and apparently it was also ranked the second friendliest town in the country by Rand McNally and by USA Today. So good for Murray at number four. At number three, Bardstown. Bardstown has, of course, bourbon, so that's always a good start. And then they were also, let's see here, it ranked, what's it say here, second in most beautiful towns, fourth most friendly. So Kentucky, Bardstown, Kentucky did a great job as well. And then in second place, Danville pulled second place, ranked second overall, ranked the most beautiful town in America in 2012. And there's lots of history in Danville. And so, you know, giving Kentucky its due, we pulled three of the 10 of the best places in America to live, so, or small towns to live. So that's a good thing. And, you know, that's always good to start on a positive note. In, let's see, I guess it was Wednesday, the governor declared a special election for the 56th House District. Representative Carl Rollins was appointed, I'm not going to find it. He's something with Kentucky Higher Education Assistance Authority. I don't know what the job title actually is, but because he's got that job, he has to leave the legislature. Now, of course, I have to ask the question. I wonder how much that job pays. Is this a cushion for his pension? You know, we have lots of pension problems in this state. And for those that aren't unaware, you know, the pension is a formula that's based on the top a certain number of years, your top pay over the course of your span. They take the top whatever number of years, depending on the particular system, and give you a certain percentage of that. So it's entirely possible that this is simply just a cushy way to bump the pension. I don't know. I don't know this representative personally, and I don't know the specifics, but it certainly would not be unheard of if that was the case. But the 56th House District is now going to have a special election because he had to resign that position, and the special election will be held on Tuesday, June 25th. So in just under 2 months now, that's when that election will be held. Speaking of the pension, we've got a problem here in the state, and for those that haven't been following the pension problems, wow, do we have problems. You know, we've got, let's see here, hold on just a minute here, folks, got a technical issue. All right, sorry. So we have the pension that is causing some of the services, some of the quasi-government entities that pay in to the pension are now starting with these new enhanced requirements to contribute more per employee into the system, because our pension is a problem. There are entities that are now trying to figure out how to get out of the pension system, and most of those are the quasi-governmental ones, the ones that are nonprofits that work with the state to provide services. I've heard instances, and I wish I could remember the exact entity, but there was one where they basically fired everybody one day and then hired all the people back as contractors the following day so that they could get out of the pension system. And the pension system actually was suing them to force them to undo all that and force all those people back into the pension, because it was very obvious what was being done there was taking the people out of the pension system, hence taking away what that entity had to pay into the pension system because these costs are getting high. Well, here, I guess it was Wednesday, it was earlier this week, there was a story on CN2 about Seven County Services Incorporated, which is a mental health services entity. They have basically come to a decision point where they either have to abandon the pension or close their doors. They're at that point where they basically are saying, look, if we don't get out of the pension system, these increased costs, these increased contributions are going to make us close. And so now there is a big to-do over it. Basically, they have filed for bankruptcy, and the idea behind this is if they file for bankruptcy, then previous contracts that they have signed are null and void, at least to some extent, depending on what the judge in the case decides. And essentially, they filed for bankruptcy specifically to get out of the pension system. And that's what they're trying to do. They say, you know, if we don't get out of the pension system, we're going to close our doors. And, you know, it's this is just one of many, I think, that are coming down the line. We've seen the pension underfunded. We've seen the pension robbed from. We've seen lots of problems with our pensions. And during the good times, they were not investing as much as they should have been because it was during the good times and, hey, it was going up, so why bother putting more money in? But now that we've been in this prolonged recession, we've got a problem. We've got a real problem. And it's going to get worse before it gets better. I really believe that no matter what the legislature does at this point, there's going to be pain involved in fixing this pension system. If not just scrapping it, may not be a better option at this point. And finding something to do with the obligations that are still left in it. You know, it's a mess. And been kind of following on that, you know, that's going to have a big impact on Kentucky over the long term, because these pensions, you know, there are commitments, and the court has ruled they are a commitment to the employees and those entitled to these pensions. And in fact, based on the way the court ruling came out, was essentially that if push comes to shove, our duty is to pay the pension first, and everything else falls by the wayside. That's the way the court ruling came out on it. And so what that means is that, hey, you want a new road? Well, that'd be great. We could fix that road, but sorry, we got to pay somebody's pension. And that could have a very, very, very serious consequence in the long term. And moving kind of along that same lines, you know, speaking of infrastructure problems and underfunding, there was an article I read sometime in the past week that I don't have up here now, but I saw that essentially our infrastructure throughout America is crumbling, because we spent the money that was supposed to be spent on infrastructure on other things. You know, over in Cincinnati, they're building a trolley that goes basically from nowhere to nowhere with money that comes out of the transportation budget, which in theory is our gas taxes. And rather than fixing our roads with that money, which is what was the intent of that fuel tax, we're building fixed rail solutions. Fixed rail? Fixed rail is like so 1900s, 1800s. Why are you putting fixed rail in anywhere? Fixed rail is just really inconvenient for everyone. It's not like you can change it. And the people pushing fixed rail will tell you, well, that's why we like it, because that'll make sure that things stay good along the rail. Well, maybe. That doesn't guarantee anything. I've been to Portland. I've seen their system. It doesn't guarantee anything at all. But essentially, we built all this infrastructure, and a lot of it was built in the 50s, the 60s, the 70s. And there's been maintenance done for a while, but we're reaching a point where maintenance isn't even good enough anymore, that there comes a point where things just get so worn down that it's time to rip and replace. And we're approaching that point, and that was the point of this article, was we're approaching the point where it's time to start tearing things out that have been underground, you know, pipes, sewage pipes, water lines, things like that, things that have been there for a long time. You know, yeah, it might have been built like a tank, but, you know, even a tank at some point outlives its usefulness. And after 50 years, 60 years underground, a pipe is going to rust. It is going to have problems. And it's time to start looking at replacing some of that infrastructure. Well, the problem is there's no money. And one of the story goes on to explain that basically the estimated amount of money it would require to replace the infrastructure that needs to be replaced, that's outlived its usefulness, worn out, whatever, is $1 trillion. That's the price tag to replace that infrastructure. Well, I don't know about you folks, but I'm not really hip to spending another $1 trillion we don't have. And that's a problem because, as we've seen in D.C., everybody's little pet projects take priority over things that actually matter. They take priority over the things that we actually do need. I mean, if there's a case to be made for the usefulness of government, especially at the local level, it's basic infrastructure. And what are we doing instead? I mean, I just don't understand how we've gotten to the point where we've allowed our politicians to do every other thing except for what most people agree is the basic function of government, which is very core, everybody uses them services, power, streets, water, sewer, very core services. And we don't have the money to fix those, because we spend $3.5 trillion a year on other garbage. And not all of it's garbage, but the point is that if there's a basic function of government that everyone would agree to, not everyone, but most everyone would agree to, it's basic infrastructure. And that's the one thing we don't fund. And in many ways, I have to wonder if that's not intentional, if it's not, and I've used this story before on the show, you know, over in Cincinnati, when a school levy fails, every time they want to raise taxes in schools over in Ohio, they have to put it on the ballot. And every time a levy fails, they end up not cutting the underwater basket weaving after school class. They don't cut sports programs that no one cares about. They cut busing. Why? Because parents have built their life and their lifestyle around, hey, the kids get on the bus and they get to school. They have jobs based on the ability of the kids to get on a bus and go to school. And it causes a major disruption to the everyday life of people in the community. And they do that on purpose. They hold the electorate hostage. They punish the electorate for not giving them their tax increase. And in many ways, you know, it's unfortunate because, first of all, it punishes the wrong people. You're not punishing the people that really are the problem, which in Kentucky anyway, you know, we have more administrator to student ratio is the highest in the nation or some crazy number like that. And there are entire counties where the main employer is the local school system. I mean, that's a little out of hand. And the point is that these services are supposed to be serving the community, and somehow they end up holding the community hostage instead. And that's something that we have to stand up and stop. And that's something that we have the ability to stand up and stop, at least at the local level. When we start getting up to the larger levels, you start getting up to the state, and especially the federal government, it gets very, very difficult. Very difficult to cut through all the BS, to be able to cut through all the partisan bickering over issues that in the end don't really matter, aren't going to change, have been the way they are for the last 50 years, and nothing gets done, but it does a really good job of dividing and distracting everyone. All the while, the important stuff falls by the wayside. Our infrastructure crumbles, and what do we have left? We'll have a call for more taxes, and that's what's going to come. They'll say, hey, you want these roads fixed? Great, pay more taxes. Guarantee you that'll come. We certainly can't cut anything. Oh, no. Now, speaking of programs that have proven to fail and could be easily cut, a report here recently came out from the General Accountability Office, a congressional watchdog agency. The GAO came out with a report that essentially says that what we're doing in the drug war is completely useless, has not solved any of the problems, and it's not going to work. And so they point out that, you know, things are – that the current tact is not working and that essentially we're wasting our money. And that is true. And it's not just in the drug war. It's lots of different policies. You know, here in Kentucky, we have the road fund, the road formula. Now, the road formula was developed back in the 50s and 60s. There were places, I don't know when our interstates were built, but I know most of them weren't here when those laws came into effect. And it's examples like that, things that they may have worked at one time, which I would contend the drug war never really worked, but you can say, hey, it worked at one time, but today these programs aren't working. And it's not that they're underfunded. They're all getting more money than they ever have. It's not that they're underfunded. It's that American society has shifted. Our way of thinking has shifted. Our way of approaching problems has shifted. And as such, our problems themselves have shifted. People give different priorities to different problems. There's just society changes. Yet these bureaucracies live on. And these policies live on long past their usefulness. And you look at something like the drug war, and you look at, hey, drug use really hasn't gone anywhere since this thing began. Is it solving anything or not? Big question. And then secondly, and more importantly, is there a better way to do this? Should we just keep throwing money at a problem and just hoping that that solves the problem? Well, that's a really bad way to do things. I mean, we see this in the business world, and I'm sure in other fields as well, but in the information technology world, sure, you can throw money at a problem and throw money at a problem, and it'll make it temporarily go away. But it's very, very costly, and it never really solves the core problem. That's what people like myself do in the industry. We go out and make recommendations on how to actually solve the problem and save money at the same time. But that's the kind of thing that we need brought to government. We need people to really examine what we're doing in all these various areas and ask the question, is there a better way to do this? Well, actually, we should first be asking, should we still be doing this? And if the answer is maybe or yes, then maybe the next question then would be, well, how do we do it better? How can we do it better? Can we look to other examples, any states, any other countries that have faced the same problem and found a better way to do it? Is there somewhere where we can save some money and get the same or better results? Because in the end, what we're bleeding worst right now is money. We're still adding tons and tons to our national debt. And these joke of proposals for cuts, all it does is cut the amount that we're going over. It cuts the amount allotted as an increase, but each of these government agencies still get an increase. It just cuts how much of an increase they get. And that's not solving the problem. We need to be talking about, do we still need these programs? What priority? And that's another big one. After you go through, do we need this? Can we do it better or cheaper, smarter? The last step is, what priority does this have? You know, there's lots of good, interesting things out there that the government funds, all these different studies, and we talked about that a few weeks ago, things that the government spends money on, these studies. And you know what? Some of them are kind of interesting. I admit, hey, you know, that's interesting, sure. But is that really a priority? Is that what we should be spending our money on? Is, you know, in good times, if we've got tons of money laying around, a bucket, pile, a pail full of money, and we don't know what to do with it, and for some reason it's impossible to give it back to the taxpayers, then let's talk about those kind of things, you know. But we're not in that situation, not by a long shot. And so we need to be putting priorities on these programs, you know, what's important and what's not. And not just at the top level, because at the top level, every program has one little piece that's super-duper important, and that's what they'll trumpet out. Every time you try to cut something, they trumpet out, oh, my gosh, you're putting seniors under pressure. Oh, my gosh, the children, think of the kids. And you know, there is waste in all these programs, and everybody knows it. Everybody knows it. It's not a matter of just cutting the budget. It's cutting it by doing things smarter, by getting rid of fraud, getting rid of waste, and getting prioritizing the spending is really going to be, I think, the best way to go. And you know what? There's going to be some things that just fall off. And I know some people will be disappointed, but quite frankly, if it's only serving a small, minor bit of the community and really doesn't provide that much value, then, you know, that nice to have, well, it's nice to have, but, you know, it's also nice not to build a bunch of debt and hand it off to your kids. That's not cool. So those are the kind of decisions we're going to have to make. And, you know, again, the pension stuff is just an example of how messed up this is, and you can't be giving away the store. And that pension, it's going to eat us alive. It's going to be painful to fix no matter what. They should have fixed it 30 years ago when they saw the problem coming. They didn't. Well, okay, but somebody's going to pay the piper for it now. Somebody's going to have to. It's just the way it is. So let's see here. I wanted to get into some more national stuff here too, and we'll get to this before the break. I should have read the number. I didn't read it before. If you want to call in tonight about any of the topics we're talking about, the number here is area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. So I want to touch on this before we hit the break. The immigration issue has been kicking up. And my Tea Party friends have been all in an uproar because Rand Paul was willing to work on an immigration reform bill. And, of course, the Tea Party is very anti-immigration in general. It's a little bit muddied there, I know, but let's just say in general, of any group that's out there, they're one of the ones that is generally anti-immigration. They were very, very upset because Rand Paul was working with this group that basically is working to figure out what to do with all the illegal aliens in the country today and process it in some orderly fashion. And quite honestly, it's going to have to be that way. There's going to have to be a carrot and a stick to this if it's going to work, any reform like that. The people are already here, so you give them a carrot for going down the right way, and you know, they're already here, so what? And there has to be a stick. You know, there has to be some means that if you don't get legit, then, you know, we're going to do something about it. I don't know what that something is, but something. Because as it stands, is it possible to send every illegal alien back to wherever they came from? Sure. Could. It's going to cost a lot of money. It's going to cost a whole lot of money. You talk about a bureaucracy the size you've never seen before, that's going to be big. I mean, you're going to have people all over the place. And, you know, quite honestly, unless you're willing to go down the racist route, which is anybody who looks like they're from somewhere else gets questioned, you better be ready for TSA-style invasions of your privacy walking up and down the streets. And I'm not real hip to that personally, but hey, you know, whatever. Well, you know, fast forward all this a little bit now, and Rand Paul's been working on this. The Tea Parties were upset. And then the Boston Marathon bombing happened. And for those that don't know, the two suspects, the one that's dead, the one that's in custody, had recently become American citizens. They had recently come here as students and become citizens. And so now Rand Paul is asking, hey, maybe we should slow down on this immigration reform thing until we figure out how these guys snuck through the system. Maybe we need to be looking at how do we tighten this down a little bit because these bad guys got through. Now, he's not saying that any system will ever be perfect, and he said that too. But, I tend to agree that it would be smart to at least look at how these folks got in. And if there's some sort of blatant loophole or blatant problem, fix it. But at the same time, and I think Rand Paul acknowledges this, and I think anybody would, there's always going to be the chance that someone bad gets through. There will always be that chance. You can't have pure safety. It's impossible to be completely safe in life. It's impossible. Because the only way to be completely safe in life is to never live. Living itself, every choice we make, you could roll out of bed tomorrow, slip, fall, crack your head and die. I mean, just getting out of bed, you can die. Slip in the tub, you die. There's lots of ways to die, crazy ways to die. There's no such thing as pure safety, and there never will be. Now, that's not to say that we should live wild, crazy lives and with, you know, no thought of, hey, maybe I shouldn't be doing this. But you can't be in the mentality of, we're going to make it the safest place. There will be no danger to anyone, anywhere, anytime. Because that mentality is the nanniest mentality. That's the one where we're going to nanny, mommy, daddy, government's going to protect you from everything. You just do everything that we tell you to do, and we'll protect you from everything. We don't want that government either, trust me. That's not going to turn out well. Because unlike your parents, your government doesn't love you. It doesn't care. Your parents, at least when they told you what to do, what not to do, and scolded you and whatever, they did it because they loved you, and they knew through their life experiences, and they did the best they could and whatever. Government doesn't know. Government doesn't care. It can't know, and it can't care. It's government. How can one entity care about 300 and something million people? It's impossible. And coming out of this stuff, I'll tell you, the Boston Marathon bombing, I've heard people on both the political left and the political right, traditional left, traditional right, both sides calling to take your and my rights away for safety. in the wake of this bombing. More of our rights taken away. Amplify the TSA. Let's get them on every street corner. Oh, that'd be great. Yeah, I love that idea. Because, hey, nothing gets me happier than a pat down every block. Oh, we need more security cameras. Security cameras everywhere. Oh, super. Because, you know, hey, it's not 1984. We're a few years late. But, hey, if we get it done by 14, he's only 30 years off. Big Brother will be watching everywhere. Great plan. No thanks. Don't want that either. There's been calls to, and this is the one that gets me, expand, and I'm trying to remember how to word this, but basically it's expanding what considered terroristic actions simply to speech. Okay, so we're really going after the First Amendment now. I mean, that's what this is. We've already given up. I mean, what amendments do we have left at this point? That's really where I'm going with this. You got indefinite detention, so that the right to a speedy trial out the window. We had search and seizure and storming homes in Boston, people applauding that and saying that's what we need to do. That's Fourth Amendment out the window. They didn't Mirandize the second suspect for a while, got a bunch of information out of him, so the Fifth Amendment's out the window. We're losing it all. It's all going away. And in the name of safety. Folks, we cannot give up everything in the name of safety. Now, I don't want to sound crass. I don't want to sound horrible about this. And I know it wasn't a good thing, and I know it wasn't, quote-unquote, uncontrollable. But I would have to guess that the Boston Marathon bombing had 3 people that died that day, sadly. But I have to wonder how many people on average, and I know this sounds crass, but stay with me here. How many people died in car accidents in Massachusetts on the same day? How many people were injured in car accidents in Massachusetts on the same day? Now, certainly car accidents and a bombing are different, and I certainly grant you that. But we don't take these crazy drastic overreactions because 3 people died in a car wreck. We're not talking about, oh, well, we need to make sure that there's a policeman that sits next to you in your car everywhere you go to prevent car accidents. We have to be very, very careful about where this leads. And I understand it. And ironically, and this is the funniest part of all, funny in a sad way, is that this type of overreaction is exactly what these terrorists want. They want you to be scared. They want you to overreact. They want you to lose your freedoms. That's what they want. And they're succeeding because you're calling for it. Don't. There's no reason to do it. The best thing that we can do is keep doing what we're doing. I mean, obviously we learn. We don't just go on like nothing happened. We learn, but we don't drastically change our lifestyles in response to things like this. If we drastically change who we are, then the terrorists win. And that's what I'm going to say. If the goal here is to make the terrorists not win, then the goal includes not drastically changing our lives. Being more aware, yes. Being more astute to the situation you're in, absolutely. No problem. We certainly don't want to give up everything. We don't need to give up all of our rights for some semblance of safety. And make no mistake, we're not going to be safe. You look at any prison in America, and there's drugs running throughout the prison system. Our prisons are locked down, yet there's drugs flying around inside. You can't get rid of certain criminal elements. You never, ever can. The goal is to mitigate and to live your life and balance safety and liberty. And when it comes to it, if I have to choose between pure safety and pure liberty, I will take pure liberty every day. Thankfully, we're not faced with a black and white dichotomy. But it seems anymore everyone wants to just focus on safety, 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 and nothing else. People forget about liberty. Oh, great. Yeah, you're going to frisk me and everybody down at every street corner or videotape me and do the body scanner thing or whatever. Okay. Isn't there a less invasive way? Isn't there a better way? Isn't there a cheaper way? Kind of tapping back on that thing. There is, and there always is. And when we, as Americans, have to accept that there is risk in life. We, as human beings, have to accept that there is risk in anything and everything that we do, and that's okay. It just is what it is, and there are things that we cannot control. If it's our time to go, it's our time to go, man. I mean, it's just what it is. But we can't give up everything for this illusion of safety. And I'm way past the bottom of the hour. I'm going to take a break here real quick, get my notes ready for the second half of the show. If you'd like to call in again on this, or we're going to talk about McCain gun control, CISPA, and the banking scandals hitting Rolling Stone magazine. If you'd like to talk about anything we've talked about or the topics coming up, you can do so calling in at area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. And remember, you have to press 1 if you want to talk. You can't just sit there in a queue. Because otherwise I don't know you want to talk, and you'll just sit there and listen, and then you'll be mad at the end because I didn't pick you up. So if you want to talk, you got to press 1. We'll be back here in just a few minutes. You're listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network.
This ain't a song for the broken hearted. My life now or never. I ain't gonna live for it.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email MyViewMatters at AOL.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, and we're back. And you are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network Sunday night. We're here every Sunday night at 7 p.m. unless Blog Talk Radio blows up. But other than that, we're here at 7 o'clock every Sunday night. And we are just one of the shows on the network. If you haven't listened to the other shows, I would highly recommend tuning into the other shows. So every Sunday night, or excuse me, every 7 p.m. Sunday through Thursday, on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, you have Ed Springston, who is exposing corruption and talking about issues in Louisville and Kentucky. And then Thursday nights, we have Thursday Night Truth with Dale Gillespie, who does a great show. I actually called in as a guest this past Thursday, and we discussed monetary policy and currency, and it was a very interesting show, and it went very, very quickly. It always does. So definitely tune into the other shows on the network. And, of course, if you're interested in advertising, you got that info. So it helps keep the shows on the air. So, and we're going to get into some of that currency stuff because after the show Thursday, I found a good story on all of that, and that's kind of how we're going to end the show. But before we get to that stuff, we have John McCain once again rearing his head, and he has vowed to bring gun control back. And he is, just remember, folks, you, my Republican friends out there, remember, he was your candidate in 2008. He was the guy, you know, he was the one you held your nose for and voted for. I don't know why, but you did. And, you know, it's amazing to me, you know, John McCain consistently attacks Rand Paul, usually by name. Rand is usually a little more gracious and doesn't attack him back by name. But, you know, he's been going after the liberty-minded people in Congress. And that should be no surprise. He's one of these folks. John McCain is one of those that is calling for these, as we talked about before the break, these extra safety measures. It's all about safety, safety, safety. And there's nothing about liberty in these conversations. And, you know, it's frustrating because there'll be folks that, you know, will still defend that they voted for McCain in 2008, which by now, geez, Pates, guys, I mean, you better realize that was a monster mistake. If you don't, please take a long look in the mirror and ask yourself, what are you doing? McCain is not one of the good guys, not by any means. He is not a liberty person. He's not liberty-minded. It amazes me. I apologize. I'm just a little stymied because I'm thinking how people could, with a straight face, walk in and pull the lever for McCain. And even now, people say, well, it could have been worse. You know, he would have been better than Obama. Really? I mean, really? Let's think about this. I mean, with the exception of Obamacare, which, by the way, was a Republican thing originally, but ignoring all that, with the exception of Obamacare, is there much different that John McCain would have done than Obama's done? I mean, really? I really don't think so. I really don't. And for that matter, since the election, has there been a whole lot done by Obama that Mitt Romney wouldn't have done? And I don't think so either. I think that, yeah, there would have been minor differences. I think the major difference would have been on foreign policy. I don't think McCain or Romney would have been giving military supplies to the Middle Eastern countries. But other than that, I don't think there have been a lot of differences. I think we would have seen crackdowns on other things. I think this push to crack down on the internet sales tax, CISPA, which we're going to get into in a moment, those things still would have happened. Those things still would have been pushed for by McCain or Romney. And in fact, and this is always kind of the sick, twisted part of it all, it would have been the Democrats saying no, not because, and this is so frustrating, it comes down to partisanship rather than principle, and it drives me absolutely crazy. You've got Democrats that know that the CISPA stuff is bad. They know that the internet tax is not good, although I'm sure they'd be more leaning towards supporting a tax, but because if a Democrat proposed it, if Obama supports it, well then, it must be okay. And I do think we're seeing a little bit less of it than we have in recent years, but and a lot of that is because Obama, I'll tell you, you know, there's been always that race to who's the worst president, right? The race to the bottom. And for many years, Carter held that. And many people believe Bush 43 now holds that. And I think that history is not going to be kind to Obama's presidency. And I think we may be looking for a three-way tie. I just don't see what good things he's accomplished. I see some bad. I see some ineffective. But I don't see anything good. I mean, I honestly. You know, and if you think I'm wrong, that's great. Question me on it. Tell me what he's done right, because I sure don't know what he's done right, per se. Not anything long-term, not anything with any real lasting ramifications. Oh, there's been little token this and that, but whoopsie-doo-dah. The little token stuff doesn't mean squat. It's the long term that matters. So, you know, the last thing that happened, he came out in favor of CISPA. And we'll switch over to that because that's one more topic we've got to hit before we get to the banks, and I got 10 minutes. Jeez. CISPA, we went over this last week on what it is, how it is, whatever, and I don't want to hash all that again because it'll take too long. But essentially, it was internet filtering and monitoring by the government. Ostensibly for our safety and security. They were going to limit what you could get on the internet. They were going to limit the internet, just in general. They were going to monitor your emails, and we talked about the groups that want to do that already, the FBI, the IRS, monitor your Facebook, monitor your email, monitor all your electronic communications. And thankfully, enough people screamed, and it failed. Now, it's pretty entertaining. I saw the Republican talking points on why CISPA's a good thing. And it's silly because it doesn't address anything. All it does is spin. It spins exactly what they say, that there's a myth and a fact piece to each one. And it's just spin. It restates the same thing in spin. Myth, CISPA forces companies to share private information with the government. Fact, all information sharing is completely voluntary. Information shared with the government is exempt from the Freedom of Information Act requests and can only be shared with the express consent of the individuals it protects. Well, wait a second. Who's it protecting? And, oh, yeah, and that's not even fully true. You know, there's still the subpoena piece to this as well. And it just drives me crazy that certain people now, especially, and it's funny, there are certain Republicans now kind of backtracking on this, realizing that they've made a boo-boo in supporting this. In fact, let's see here. CISPA co-sponsor Mike Rogers retweeted a story about CISPA. And one of the part of the story explained how much money was being funneled to the people that were pushing CISPA. And then he deleted the tweet later on, of course. But, you know, there was a good piece, a good amount of information about how much money was involved in this. And so a company from MapLight, was the name of it, according to the MapLight piece, Representative Rogers received $214,750 from interest groups that support CISPA. So, you know, there are groups out there that want to work around your rights. There are groups out there that want to take your rights away. And make no mistake, there's big money in that, and so they're willing to spend money on that. And that's kind of what that is. They spend that money to get what they want, and it takes a very, very loud, unified voice to stop it. And thankfully, there were enough people out there screaming about CISPA to say no, again, no, and no, really, this time, we really did mean it the first two times, no, that it's dead again. But, again, it's not dead. This thing is like the it's like Swamp Thing. It comes back again. It's back, and it'll be back again, and I'm sure this time, it'll be so much better this time. Or maybe they'll change its name again, because the first time that's what they thought, we'll change its name and it'll get through. And that didn't work. So we have to keep a watchful eye on these folks. They will try again. They are bound and determined to take your liberties away to make it easier for companies to gather your private information, to make it easier for the government to monitor your private communication. And the only people that get the raw end of that are you and me. The companies win, the government wins. That's why this new version of CISPA is so dangerous, is that the only people who get the short end of the stick are you and me. And so we must remain vigilant. We must keep watching. We must make sure that when this thing comes back, whether it's called CISPA again or if it's called something else, that we again get real loud and real noisy and put an end to it yet again. We got about 5 minutes left here, and I really should have saved a little more time for this story, but jumping topics to our final topic for tonight. Very, very interesting story in the Rolling Stone online site here, Rolling Stone magazine, dated April 25th, about banks and talking about different banking conspiracy theories that have been out and about in the past. And but the story mainly focuses on how there is a real-life conspiracy going on here. Now, some folks, I don't know if everybody's familiar with what was called the LIBOR scandal. That's LIBOR. If you go out and Google LIBOR, LIBOR scandal, you should be able to find out bits and pieces of the information. Essentially, what happens is there are banks, big banks from all over the world, that submit interest rates to LIBOR. And essentially, it's how much money, how much does it cost to borrow money from certain banks? And there was a scandal as far as price fixing was concerned. And there's been lawsuits based on various different things, different lawsuits that have gone after different pieces of this puzzle. But Rolling Stone has a four-page article. I mean, it's a long, long article on this entire scandal and how there really is a conspiracy to control interest rates and money flow, a global scandal. And, you know, they joke here, forget the Illuminati. This is the real thing, and it's no secret. And you can stare at it anytime you want. And they go through some of the lawsuits that they go into the background on how they found the loopholes and what they were doing and the lawsuits that came through. They've got one of the trading a conversation between one of the people that puts in LIBOR and a trader that says, hey, can you fix the price at this? And the submitter, the LIBOR submitter says, well, what's it worth to you? The guy says some day-old sushi from yesterday, and the submitter says, okay, just for you. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff that's going on behind the scenes here. And it's amazing. I mean, there's there's lawsuits all over the place because people lost a lot of money. And it's actually kind of interesting. It's some rich people screwing over some other rich people. And so there's lawsuits involved in that and investment houses that were getting screwed over. You know, and so these are the big guys, and they're filing lawsuits. I mean, there's a lot of money here, a lot of money. In fact, I'm going to try to look this up here real quick, and I apologize. I meant to print this story out, and it's just been a busy week and crazy stuff going on. But there was a number in here that I'm trying to find, and I'm not finding it, unfortunately. But there was a number of $500 trillion thrown around in here somewhere. And, you know, it's simply amazing that there was that. Basically, they were saying that there was $500 trillion in fraud going on in this whole thing. That is an amazing amount of money. I mean, I guess our $16 trillion debt is not really looking like a whole lot when you compare that kind of number. But it's simply amazing. And you know, I posted this story on my Facebook page when I first saw it on Friday, and there was a number of folks that got on there and posted some various things, got shared around, whatever. But, you know, again, it was an interesting thing. One of my friends said, hey, you know, what about Bitcoin now? You know, Bitcoin wasn't involved in this, and maybe there is a, despite the fact that Bitcoin, he didn't go in this far, but my thought on it was, well, hey, maybe besides the fact that Bitcoin is also an unfunded currency, right, there's nothing that backs it, per se, that it's just as legitimate as the rest of the system. I mean, if they're tinkering with the system at such a level that we're all just getting bent over here, I mean, then I don't know what's the point. I don't know the answer to that. I mean, there has to be some mechanism, some way, somehow of making sure that our labor, our work, what we earn money for or payment for, is somehow protected in some way that is not manipulatable, I can't say that word, by these people. And honestly, I don't know how you do that. I mean, these same folks have the ability to make the price of gold go up and down. We talked on Thursday night on Dale's show that, you know, the Bitcoin spike and drop, I'm almost certain, was some sort of outside manipulation that was set up to try to discredit that whole setup. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know what to do, per se. But it's a very interesting story. I really, really, really recommend go out to rollingstone.com. It's under the politics section. Find the story. Everything is rigged. The biggest price-fixing scandal ever. And read that. You will be amazed. It is a very well-written story, explains the situation well, and I don't know after that. I don't know what to do, but what I do know is we're out of time for the week. So, folks, I hope you enjoyed the show. Tune in next week for another edition of Liberty Unbridled. Tune in Monday through Thursday for other shows on the network as well. Folks, you have a good week. We'll see you next week on My View Matters Radio Network.